Hello and welcome to the Mars Mindset Podcast, where we talk about personal development, psychology, preparation, and so much more. Today, I have the opportunity to speak with an incredible person. His name is Zuby. Zuby is a rapper, author, podcaster, public speaker, coach, and he is the author of a book called Strong Advice, which is a great book that he's had incredible results with. And in this conversation, we talk about a variety of things. Zuby's one of my favorite thinkers out there in the world today. I love his Twitter feed. So if you're not following him right now, I highly recommend you do so on Twitter and YouTube and everywhere else. I know you're going to love this conversation. It was one of my favorite interviews that I've done. And so without further delay, please enjoy this episode with Zuby. Hey, Zuby, thank you for joining us today. It's a real honor to have you on the show.
Hey, Patrick. All good, man. Happy to be here.
So you have been on the show before, but I would love to hear from your perspective sort of how you define yourself these days. What do you see yourself as and what words do you use to describe all the variety of things that you do?
Sure thing, man. So I'm an independent musician, author, podcast host, public speaker, and coach, all-around creative entrepreneur. Everything I do started out with just my music. I released my first album back in 2006 as an independent rapper. I've released another 8 projects since then, and I've added additional strings to the bow. I started my podcast in 2019 called Real Talk with Zuby, wrote and released my first book, Strong Advice, in 2019 as well. Got another book coming out this year and more to come. And I also do public speaking. I do social media coaching, life coaching, fitness coaching, a range of things. So I am a man of many interests.
Yes, clearly. And I recommend everyone follow your Twitter. You'll get a glimpse into the many different facets of your expertise, you could say, as well as the different business ventures that you're involved in and different works that you work with. And I wanted to ask about how this sort of transition took place from music and cultural, let's say cultural projects into the world of public speaking on politics and all sorts of matters. It seems like you've become an authority over recent years on some of this craziness that's going on in the media and the world. And so where did that begin for you? Where did that division start?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, man. It's something I've been somewhat mapping out myself as well, because it's not necessarily something that I fully thought out to become. So I left my job. I think it's important to understand why I got into music to begin with. So I started music initially just as a hobby and as a form of creative expression and a way of using my voice and my talents through music and rapping to be able to get a message out to people, to lift people up, to be a positive inspiration, to motivate other people. That's primarily what my music is about and what it's always been about. And then in 2011, I left my full-time job. From 2008 to 2011, I was a management consultant. I actually worked for a big global company. And November 2011, I took the jump to go become a full-time musician, not because I thought I'd make more money from it or it would be anything remotely as stable, but because I knew I couldn't have an impact on millions of people sitting there in an office kind of doing a normal job. I wanted to have more of a reach, more of a positive influence, and I just knew I wasn't going to fulfill it there. So that is how it all started. I think the goal and primary motivation behind all the things that I do now is not so different from what it was when I started out. I've always wanted to use my voice to inspire, educate, help people to think more critically, help people to pursue the truth, become the better versions of themselves, encourage people to fulfill their potential and go out in the world and help other people to do the same thing. And that's still what I do. I now do it through my music. I also do it, though, through social media, through podcasts and interviews, television appearances, public speaking, writing, recording, any way that I can use my mind and my creativity and my thoughts to get them out there in a way that could positively help some people, I'm willing to do it. So it started out, as we said, just with the music, and I've added additional facets to it since then. But the overall goal has simply become bigger in terms of reaching more people and using more than just my ability to rap to do so.
I think that's incredible. I mean, I love the sort of foundational principles that you're operating on and seeing how that expanded into a whole new world. And I got to take that a step further and just ask you straight up, would you ever consider taking that to the next level and really becoming a public official, being an elected person, going into that kind of space? I'm sure you might get that question a fair bit these days, given that you have excellent narratives and different great takes on what's happening in the world, especially when you compare that to, I think, some of our Western leaders. Do you get that question a lot, and what's your answer to that?
Yeah, I get that question several times a week. You know, are you going to run for office, or is Zuby for president, Zuby for prime minister, or whatever, which is flattering to begin with. It is flattering. I'm not going to say never, but certainly not anytime soon. I think that I can help more people in the social and cultural and artistic realm than I can in the political realm, at least at this stage. Life is unpredictable. I'm 35 years old right now. I don't know where I'll be when I'm 55, 65, for sure, 70 plus, right? I might reach a stage where it's like, you know what? Maybe the best thing that I can do is to involve myself in some kind of official capacity. But I'm really happy with seeing the effect that I'm having on people right now. Things have grown so much. I mean, since I was last on your podcast in 2019, I've probably increased my overall following by about 5x, and been featured on all types of platforms, reached and helped so many people all around the world. And it's really tangible as well. You know, it's one thing seeing numbers going up online, but no matter what city I'm in, wherever I am in the world, I will get people who come up who recognize me in public, you know, at the gym, in a restaurant, wherever, and come up to me and thank me. You know, the most common thing people say is thank you. You know, thanks for putting your thoughts and your ideas and your music and your podcast, all the things you do. Thank you for putting them out there because it has helped me and influenced me positively in some way, shape, or form. And so for me, there's nothing more amazing than that. I mean, I'm an independent artist from England. So for me to be in, whether I'm in Texas or New York or Turkey or Portugal or Mexico, and, yes, the fact that anyone even recognizes me or values what I'm doing, to me, that's a really, really positive sign that things are on the right trajectory. And even just seeing some of the people who I'm being able to connect with at all different levels, people of different ages. I mean, when I was just doing music, virtually everybody who, 95% of people who knew about me were in a handful of cities in the UK and between the ages of, let's say, 14 and 25. But now I'm finding, I get people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, teens, 20s, like all ages, who appreciate and value what I do in different ways and on different levels. And so that's really, it inspires me. It inspires me, and it's very humbling. It's just one of those indicators that lets me know, okay, cool, like you are having a positive impact on people, because that's my goal. That's what I always say my goal is. And I sense I'm doing it in some way, shape, or form, and it's nice getting DMs or comments or messages, but it's another thing just having that real world, seeing people in person, whether it's at an event or you're just out and about doing your daily business and you're recognizing, okay, cool, like people are genuinely enjoying what I do. You know, if I do a meetup in a city, I might have 100 people show up and just want to meet me and hang and, get a selfie and chat, talk about different ideas, connect, meet with different people. So that's really, really beautiful.
Yes, I can certainly attest to that. Going to one of your events, like everybody is having a great time. It's very positive energy. And I think that comes from the energy that you create with your brand and with the, your positive foundational values, those things that we talked about earlier. I'm curious with, you know, your impact on culture. One of the things I love speaking to you because you have this sort of international presence, you know, like I think a lot of people in the United States live in like a US bubble. People in other Western countries live in their bubble. You kind of have this international presence and have an impact on the culture everywhere that you're, you know, posting your content. You know, it's a global influence. I'm curious sort of how you see the relationship between the culture today that's being generated, you know, by people like you and other people sort of in this space, and how that is influencing politics, and if it's actually influencing politics to the level that maybe it should be. You know, like I understand, like you've seen your following grow a ton. You've seen a lot of people waking up to a lot of these ideas. But when it actually comes to reflecting in public policy and things like that, do you feel like the connection is still or is strong there? Or do you think there's a detachment where there's a ruling class or running away with things that, you know, even everyday people in our political philosophies are not really having an impact on?
I think that it is having an extremely profound impact, actually. And I think that people forget how new this all is. I mean, when was the iPhone invented? 2006?
2008, 2009-ish. 2008, yeah. I believe, was when it was 2008? Yeah.
I want to say 2006. But okay, like either one. Let's say around that time.
YouTube or something.
Sometime between 2006 and 2008. And the rise of social media. I know Facebook was 2014. I believe Facebook was founded. 2004. Sorry, 2004. And then other platforms. So really, we're talking, let's say, from 2005 onward.
Yes.
We've had 16 to 17 years having the combination of smartphones and fairly widespread broadband and social media. And in that short space of time, I mean, in considering human history, 16 years is nothing. Even within somebody's lifetime, 16 years is a very short space
of time. Less than a blink. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've seen real profound changes, actually. And I think it's been very creatively destructive. It's brought in new opportunities and new challenges. What I do for a living, what you do for a living, you know, wouldn't have been possible not so long ago. The fact that we are connecting, this conversation we're having right now in real time with us being in different cities, separated, people can see us in HD, people can hear us, we can then share this with thousands more people. All of this is really new. And I think that people adapt to things so quickly that they sometimes forget how new it is. And I think sometimes people expect things to happen unrealistically quickly. So yeah, it is definitely the case that lots of these avenues of power, or, you know, the corporate media, corporate press, politicians, states, governments, like all of these things still hold a lot of power, and people still, you know, typically go along with the narrative and so on. But if you just think back, I mean, if you were to think back just two decades ago plus, let alone hundreds of years ago, it was just that whatever they said went, right? Like that all through human history, really, it was like whoever's at the top, whether it's a king or a queen or a dictator or some organization, it's like whatever they say just goes. That becomes the fact. You can't question it. You can't seek alternative avenues. You can't listen to podcasts or watch YouTube videos or whatever to get a second opinion. It's just like, well, they said that this happened, so that's it. Everyone get with the program. So while there still is a lot of that, and, you know, there is still a lot of power in the media that they could just put something out there, even if it's not correct, and a lot of people go with it, it's not everybody, right? You now have the ability to go, wait, hang on, is that correct? Let me check it with other people. Let me not just check, let me communicate. Let me ask questions on social media. People can reply. People can, what do you guys think of this? Is this accurate? Is this correct? Whatever. And this is across everything. I'm not just talking about politics and social issues, but everything. Take something, you know, nutrition, right? Medicine, right? In the past, people, they could just say anything, right? Oh, you're sick. It's because you've got bad blood. So we need to stick some leeches on you and get them to like drain your blood. Or we need to hang you upside down. And, you know, like it was just, there was no way to really make sense of things. It was just trust the authority and that's it. Now that still exists, as I said, to some degree, but at least you can seek out alternatives. You can share your opinions. You can influence people. You can be influenced by people. You still have those legacy branches of information, but you also have access essentially to billions of people's brains and thoughts and ideas around the world. Now, this brings a whole bunch of challenges with it, right? This is social media is very much a double-edged sword. And the advantage and the disadvantage is the same thing, right? The best thing about social media is that everybody has a voice and has access to you. The worst thing is that everybody has a voice and has access to you. And if you're someone who's putting stuff out in the public, you deal with the pros and cons of this, right? Like, I get a lot of love, a lot of praise. I've met so many great people in the real world that started out as online connections and so on. Also, you deal with a lot of criticism and attacks and hate and insults and, you know, all of this stuff. So it's a real balance. And I think it's very hard to say right now where this goes in the long term, because as far as I'm concerned, we're living in the greatest human experiment of all time. We've never had so many people so connected in the way that we are now. I mean, human beings are not really designed and built to be around, you know, to know more than a few hundred people and maybe to be around more than a few thousand, right? I mean, and now, like, I don't know, like, I could just on Twitter alone, I've got almost 700,000 followers as we record this. And it's like, and that's just one platform. I mean, I'm not supposed to be, my biology is not hardwired to be to be in touch, let alone to have over 500,000 people following me and seeing what I'm thinking, watching what I'm doing, caring about what I'm thinking. And this is an immense and unknown power. And it's amazing and it's cool and I love it, but it's also really scary and experimental. And I don't always know what effect it has on me. I don't know what effect it has on everybody else. I think we need to be really, really careful with how we use it. You can look at certain markers, things like, depression or anxiety and certain mental health issues and so on. And you can see a bad correlation between those things and the introduction of smartphones and social media and all that. But then you've also got all the positive. And I think we're in this stage of growth. And I think there's a lot of growing pains that are going on with it. And I think a lot of the issues that we have now over time, they will be sorted out. I just think we kind of have to go through this messy and dirty phase of, you know, I don't really know what to call it, this cacophony of voices and ideas and things going out there. And these people think the right way to do it, we need to like censor or deplatform people, or we need to praise these limits. And these people are like, no, we need more speech and we need more access and we need this and we need that. And I think this will get worked out. I think it'll get worked out. It's taken society a very long time to work out a lot of big issues. You know, how long did it take people to get over the idea that judging people based on their skin color is a bad idea, or like, you know what, enslaving and owning other human beings, that's a bad idea. It took thousands of years to work that out, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Something that seems very, very obvious and clear to any modern being. So I think that we are just really early in this and things will get worked out over time.
I certainly appreciate the optimism that these things will get sorted out over time. And I like to ask you these large sort of questions that we don't have a clear answer to, because I think, you know, as we sit here in the middle of the lab experiment, you know, we can try to figure out sort of like what's going to happen in the future and what's going to happen, what could happen positively or negatively. And and sort of raising this question about the double-edged sword of social media, you know, one of the things that I think about is, you know, can we overcome some of these challenges? Will we have the opportunity to work out the challenges that are the new challenges, let's say the modern day challenges that are new, part of this experiment? Like you said, you know, having access to people and being able to talk to them all the time is, you know, it's the good and the bad. The good and the bad to me for social media that I see most regularly is, you have access to abundant information, which the good side is like, oh, you have access to abundant information. On the bad side, there's too much information. Most people simply don't have the like bandwidth, the processing power to sift through it all, especially, you know, when we look at the way the world is operating today and the pace of change that is happening. Like, we just watched the narrative shift from one major event that was taking, you know, 2 years of talking about COVID to all of a sudden, as we record this, we're in the midst of you know, what seems, what could be the, you know, precursor to World War III with this Ukrainian Russian conflict, and the speed at which these things are changing, and people's just their ability to process that information. I'm curious what your take is on, you know, like, how do we improve that experience? Do we have time to work through the feedback loops of this new technology before, you know, something catastrophic happens? Like, people simply can't process or sift through the data enough to get to the source of truth when we need it, or things, you know, could things go awry before we have the opportunity to do that?
Man, it's a really interesting question, and it's something that I think about myself a lot. I mean, something that I understand as someone who's, you know, had thousands of conversations and been to many places and studied history to some decent degree, you know, I've come up to some fairly simple conclusions. And one of those for sure is that things are not perfectible, right? Like, there's always going to be a degree of mess. And I think sometimes we make the mistake, especially in modern society, of seeking, let me not say seeking perfection, but perhaps expecting perfection to even be achievable, right? And not wanting to accept any risk or not wanting to accept any bit of messiness or anything like that. But messiness is always going to happen. Human beings are flawed. Our brains are not perfect. We are emotional. We all have biases. We have different perspectives and ideas and philosophies and backgrounds and experiences that shape our perspectives. And this is all an amazing part of the human experience. Imagine how boring it would be if we were all these drones who are identical and look the same and feel the same and have the same personalities and so on. It would be awful. But what it means is that when you put 8 billion of these beings on a spinning rock, or you put hundreds of millions of them on one landmass, you're going to get conflict, you're going to get confusion, you're going to get disagreement, you're going to get love, hate, you know, violence, all of these things. And I think we should always be striving for better. But in the search for that, it seems that, you know, if you look at history, it seems every time someone has tried to make their version of a utopia, it's always ended up in a horrible dystopia, which has killed millions of people. So I think we need to be quite humble in the way that we approach that. I also think another conclusion that I've drawn is that human beings don't really change, and we haven't changed much, right? We are the same from a biological perspective and a psychological perspective. We're the same as our ancestors. Like, you know, you can look back at, I don't know, say you even just go back to 300 years ago, 1722, right? To us, 1722, that sounds like old, let alone 1522 or 1022. I mean, how long ago is 1722? That's what, five people?
Yeah, five full generations, sure.
Yeah, okay, that's five lifetimes of people. Like, so I don't know, what's that, our great, 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 great grandfathers and grandparents, right? Like, biologically, we're the same. Psychologically, we're the same. The advantages that we have as modern human beings is, number one, we have access to history, so we can learn from prior generations' virtues and mistakes, and we can look back and see the things that they did wrong, and we can go, okay, that's not good. And we can also see the good things and say, okay, like, let's carry on that tradition, let's bring that idea into our modern society. That's one advantage we have. And the second advantage we have is that we have better stuff, right? We have more technology. We have, you know, we now have our computers and the internet and social media and smartphones and VR and whatever else is coming in the future. But I think it's really important for us to remember that we're still the same. So humans are still prone to all of the inherent virtues and flaws that we've always had. Everything that has happened, and this is a sobering thought, which is that everything that's happened in history can happen again in some way, shape, or form. And I think it's very easy, especially in the modern world with us all being very, very comfortable and, you know, not having to constantly deal with, most of us don't constantly have to deal with famine, war, pestilence, like stuff that used to wipe out tons and tons of people all the time. You're right, our life expectancy is going up and so on. We've lived very comfortable lives. You know, if you were born in the 70s, 80s, 90s, thousands, you've probably lived a pretty comfortable life as far as historical standards go, especially
Absolutely.
If you are born in the West. If you're in America, Canada, UK, a country like that, you know, we're genuinely, I don't like the word privilege because it's been so overused, but we're some of the most privileged people to ever walk the face of the earth. And I think given it's been like that for many decades, it's easy to forget how fragile it all is and how quickly actually we can be plunged into a crisis or conflict or something that causes some of those more base human emotions to come out and flare up. We've seen some of that over the past 2 years for sure. We might be seeing some of that again with what's going on now with this recent conflict. I mean, there's always conflicts going on, but you know what? Here's an interesting question, and I'm not saying this to upset anybody who might be listening, but it's even interesting to think of like why so this Ukraine-Russia conflict, why do the Western media and Western people care about it so much more than a lot of other conflicts that have been going on in many cases for the past several decades, right? All of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, look at this. This is horrible. This is terrible. And so on, which it is. But there are a lot of things that are like that. Some which have killed more people. There's conflicts going on in the Middle East. There's conflicts going on in Africa. There's conflict that's happening constantly, and people don't respond evenly to it. And I think a big part of it is simply that it is happening in what is considered a more Western country, right? It just hits closer to home. If you hear about a conflict in Syria or in Yemen or even in China, if you live in the US, if you live in the UK, it sounds, you know, geographically and culturally, it's further away. But then if, you know, there's a conflict that happens in Canada or there's a conflict that happens in Europe or something, it's like, oh, whoa, okay, that's, I think it hits people on a deeper level because it's just like, oh, wow, you can relate and connect more to those individuals and it's geographically closer. So, you know, 3 weeks ago, nobody was thinking about war. Right. Like in the West, people weren't thinking about the potential for war. Right. It just wasn't in the mindset. Everyone was still in pandemic mode if they hadn't gotten over it. And suddenly within a few days, it's just like, oh, my gosh, there's the potential for this thing, which we thought we were done with. Right. How many wars have happened throughout history? Hundreds, thousands of wars. Like humans have been at war with each other forever. But to us now, that's no longer the default. The default is peace, which is great, right? I'm not lamenting this. It's just that you see that, oh wow, stuff can go sideways really quickly. All of a sudden, you know, you think, okay, we're done with this thing. We're past it. And oh, here's this threat once again. I think the same thing happened. And I think it's why there was such, what I'd consider an overreaction to even the pandemic situation, because people were, you know, people have been talking and acting for the past 2 years as if prior to 2020, no one used to die, right? Like disease was not a thing prior to 2020. It's like, guys, like people have been 60 million people a year around the world die and have done our entire lives. And death is a part of life. You know, we have 100% mortality rate. None of us are gonna make it. Illness is a thing and it sucks. Disease happens, you know, people catch diseases, people get sick, people die. You know, there are diseases that we can even spread to each other. Some things are transmissible and so on. But I think that the way this one happened, you know, when COVID came in early 2020, again, I think modern people were just like, oh my gosh, like, what do we do? Right? Like I thought we were done with pandemics, right? Oh my gosh, there's a pandemic, there's a virus, you know, and people responded like it was the Black Death, right? Yeah. Which had, I don't know, like a 30 plus mortality rate. In this case, we were talking like a well below 1% mortality rate in reality. But the response was very, very severe to the point which I'd argue the response actually has caused more problems than the actual initial threat did. So I don't know, man. I like, even talking now, like, I'm constantly just thinking out loud, and I don't have the answers to all of these things, but I think it's really interesting to consider that. But something I have been thinking a lot about recently is just this concept of us human beings kind of being the same kind of throughout history.
Yeah.
And then our environment changes and our technology changes and the circumstances of the world changes, but on a very base level, our hardware remains the same.
I agree. And I think about that quite a bit as well. Just the fact that, you know, like, evolutionarily, like, our physical forms, Homo sapien, we've been in the same physical condition for over 100,000 years. Like, evolution is really slow. And, you know, I think this kind of goes back to, you know, when we look at that and we look at the way that humans evolve, you know, like, we have a understanding of sort of like, what buttons can you push in people to elicit certain responses. Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm noticing that some people are getting really good at pushing those buttons and know where those buttons are and exactly what order to push them in to mm-hmm. get the results that they're looking for. And again, I feel like this goes back to the bandwidth thing, because when we look at things like you mentioned, how, you know, with Ukraine and Russia, like, that's something that hits closer to home. You know, I'd say it sort of stokes something in the American, you know, memory of the Cold War, you know, having this mm-hmm. like ongoing, you know, 50 year plus conflict with Russia. But I think it's also just something that they just decided to hone in on and create a lot of, you know, call it hype or whatever around mm-hmm. it, compared to things that, you know, even sort of against your point, it's like, we have things geographically that are much closer to home that have get 0 minutes of cable news attention, or even, you know, politicians or the president talking about, like, you know, you can hear or watch a video of a dozen people get dying by, like, essentially a firing squad in Mexico. Crickets, you know, mm-hmm. but then you have a conflict with, you know, a conflict over territory on the other side of the world. You know, you kind of compare the two. It's like, there's a fire, you know, our house is on fire, but we're worried about a house 3,000 miles away. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy. But this comes back to the bandwidth thing to me, because same thing with the COVID and talking about, you know, like, all of a sudden people, it's like they act like we never died before, you know, people mm-hmm. never suffered before. And you try to, you know, if you want to get into that debate, talking about, you know, like, the mortality rate of COVID and other things. And then you talk about, like, oh, well, obesity, fentanyl, all these mm-hmm, things that mm-hmm. cause just as many or more deaths per year in the United States or other Western countries. It's as if their brains cannot, you know, let's say average people, most people who don't study this stuff for, like, a living or even out of just genuine interest, it's like so much information, they can't even possibly know what to do with it. So what do we do with, and I know I don't expect you to have the exact answer here, but this problem where people know how to push the buttons of everyday, you know, normal working class people who are focused on their lives, their families, their kids, you know, school, whatever, things that are important to them compared to, you know, manufactured conflict and, you know, sort of driving people in one direction. How do we overcome the ability of people to push those buttons in that right order to get the kind of response that that they know they're going to get mm-hmm. from, you know, just understanding human psychology?
Well, I think for the reasons we already just covered, I don't think that we can, because our psychology is our psychology, and humans respond certainly at a group level, but even on an individual level to some degree. And anyone who's ever studied sales or marketing or advertising, I mean, this is really what you're doing. You're tapping into human psychology and certain triggers. There's certain social triggers that just work and always have and always will, really. So I don't think we can or necessarily even would want to stop or prevent that. But I think what we can do is encourage and empower individuals to think more clearly and think more carefully and be more principled and think more logically and rationally, and not always just be reactionary and get caught up in their emotions, to consider things from different angles. And I think that's a lot of the value in what we do with things like podcasts, you know, these long form podcasts. We're just here having a conversation, sharing our ideas, and then other people can listen to it and partially agree, partially disagree. Maybe there's something we say which sets off a thought in their mind and they come up with their own ideas and so on. So I often say, you know, I'm not in the business of telling people what to think, let alone forcing them to think or to do something. But I'm in the business of encouraging people to think, right? I don't want to tell you what to think, but I want to tell you to think. It doesn't mean we're going to come to the same conclusion on anything, let alone everything. But I can share my perspective. My perspective is just one of 8 billion. I've lived my life. I've had my experiences. I have my abilities and ways of articulating things. This is the way I see things. I could be right. I could be wrong. I could be corrected on this. Maybe I'm spot on this other thing. And then there's some stuff that we just don't know. There are very big questions that exist in the world, which I don't believe are answerable, right? I mean, that's why, you know, we have, you know, the word science is probably one of the most bastardized words over the past 2 years, right? But even science, for all the advancements and great things that have come from the fields of science, you know, physics, chemistry, biology, mathematics, even with all that, science doesn't and can't give you the answer to everything. This is why we have religion, we have philosophy, we have various realms of theory and ideology and ideas, because we need a framework. I mean, it's good to know how things are happening, but if you want to understand why or how you should live your life or how you should treat other people, how you should act in the world, how you should treat yourself, treat others, so on, we need to go deeper. You can't just have a harsh, purely rational scientific view on these things. And if you do, it can often lead to very, very dark places. So I think that's the best we can do, is to encourage and empower individuals. Say, like, hey, you know, you've got a brain, you've got your life, you've got control of your life to a strong degree. We can't control everything. There's so much in the world. There's way more in the world that we cannot control than we can. But we can mostly control ourselves. We can't even perfectly control ourselves. We can't perfectly control our bodies, perfectly control our minds, our desires, our temptations, our emotions, all of these things. We can control them to some degree, but even when it comes to yourself, we're not totally in control, let alone of everybody else and all the things in the environment and so on. So while I'm always, I'm ever the optimist, you know, I think that in the long term, humanity is generally trending upwards. And even when we're going through little blips and corrections, overall in the long term, I'm optimistic. But I always temper that just with an understanding of our flaws and the fact that there are going to be permanent challenges, permanent struggles, permanent difficulties that have always existed. And every time you get a big shift in society or culture or technology, you're going to get some benefits, but you're also going to introduce brand new problems. There are problems that exist now in 2022 that we didn't have in 2002. Some of the questions you've asked in 2002, you wouldn't have asked them because the technology had not created that problem. So I think everything is always trade-offs. It's rare to have some big shift that happens in a society across any sector that's all good or all bad. Normally, it's just it's a matter of trade-offs. And I guess ideally, we want to make sure that the positive that we are gaining is greater than the negative being introduced. And even with that, sometimes we often don't know until decades down the line. There could be something that a technology that pops up this year, or a shift that happens politically, or a shift that happens socially this year. And it might not be until 2045 or 2055 where you can really see the impact of it. So I think, again, that's why it's so important to converse and to think about things very carefully and not just do knee-jerk responses to everything, because just going with the emotion on most things oftentimes is going to land you in trouble, especially if you're, it can land you in trouble even on an individual level. But I think as a society as a whole, if, you know, some threat comes along and the immediate response is kind of just the emotional gut instinct reactionary one, oftentimes, I think more times than not, it won't be the right response.
Yes, I agree 100%. I think we've seen that throughout history. In the United States, we can look back to 9/11 and sort of how that created a gut-wrenching emotional moment in American history that then got converted and utilized for the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan and things that really had nothing to the two events weren't particularly related, but one was exploited for the other. I also, just on this point, I do have a couple of potential ideas of how this will be overcome. And I think, generally I'm also very optimistic. I think that with technology and, you mentioned earlier, it's like our laptops, our phones, our computers, like all this stuff has gotten so much better. And in my mind, this is one of those things that's like the only way out is through. And I think, this is going to go one or two ways. One is the technological route where we have, something like Neuralink or some sort of thing tapped into our minds to help us better process information, some sort of future that I think few could ever even imagine, being able to like think to each other. We'll just be having this conversation in pure silence, just having a dialogue over some sort of neural network, which is one alternative. But another that I see sort of when I look at the cycles of history and where we are today is something with some sort of religious aspect. When you look at religion and a purpose that it's served throughout human history is it's a shared value mechanism, right? It's like a way of instilling values into people and generations of people without having to have a rationale behind every single thing, or at least not having every single person understand that rationale, but more so overarching values and principles that help guide people in one direction, and something like you mentioned with, just being able to temper our response to things. If there's something super emotional happening in the news, everyone should care for and, maybe express concern if they feel it for innocent people in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But having that, that situation, trying to avoid that from becoming the next, kind of American 9/11, utilizing that to launch a whole nother, multi-decade long war, like tempering that sort of response or that reaction with a shared value system seems to me like something that's happened over and over again throughout history is people sort of tap into that religious instinct or it kind of reasserts itself into the public mind. Whereas now when I look around, I think we're on sort of the dying end of old religion and there's something potentially new sort of on the horizon here that could unite people spiritually in a way that, it's kind of an awakening in a way. I'm curious sort of with you in your ability to sense truth, right? I'd say you have a really great, I would call it sense of truth out there in the world, but, parsing through this information, looking at, what could be true, what could be false, sort of raising a red flag for when something is bullshit. It's like, where do you fall on this as far as, that sense of truth and, potentially a potential future of some religion sort of helping to aid that in everyday people?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think that traditional religion is alive and well. Billions and billions of people around the world are people of faith, Christians, Islamic, Hindus, Jews, so on and so forth. I think in the West, it might look like things have become much more secular and, people have shifted away from God and those traditions, which is true to some degree. But again, it's exaggerated in the way that it's often presented. It's not like we live in this totally atheistic, godless, secular society or something. God forbid I say this as a Christian. so I don't think that... That's going anywhere, nor that it should. I'd also be very wary of anything that could supplant religion that is not a religion in itself. It's been tried again. It's been tried many times before. Absolutely. Often with very horrific consequences. But I think that what we should do is, I think a big problem we have is people getting stuck in binary thinking and false dichotomies, right? Everything being either or, you'll hear people say things like science or religion.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, both guys, like you, why is it always either or, why is it you have to be pro this thing or you must be anti that thing? It's like, no, like to me, these are all things that we have. And over the course of thousands and thousands of years, including many people, just as wise, if not wiser than us, have provided us with a range of different tools. So we have religion, we have science, we have philosophy, we have politics and political systems, we have traditions and cultures, and all of these things are this web. It's like a color palette that we have, and we have all these different colors that we can use. So it's like, well, why stick to monochrome? I mean, yeah, sure, we have that one, but it's like, well, you've also got these other colors. So in terms of trying to understand the world and seek a path through, I think it would be very silly and even very sort of flippant and arrogant to want to just jettison some of these ideas. You know, like I have friends and acquaintances of all types of different beliefs, you know, different religions, different political views. I know, you know, people who are totally atheistic and, you know, 100% in that secular mindset. I know very, very devout religious people. And I think a mistake that a lot of, let's say, anti-theist type atheists make is, I think it's kind of twofold. I think number one is wanting to just jettison thousands of years of tradition and knowledge and, you know, cultural practices and beliefs, and just disregard them completely, right? Like, just throw that, like, people who are just, you know, all of religion, like, it's all nonsense, just throw it in the trash, let's get rid of this whole thing, and then humanity can flourish, right? I think that is right. I think reducing your toolkit in that sense, if you want to view it even from a pragmatic level,
sure,
is incorrect. Obviously, from a spiritual and truth perspective, I have an issue with it. And also, I just think it's extraordinarily arrogant, right? I mean, we've had billions and billions of people who have existed in this planet before us, and there are certain things that they have brought through over the course of that have existed and persisted for centuries or thousands of years. And, you know, there's probably a reason for it. This is not to say that just because something has existed for a long time, it should continue to exist, right? That's not the point I'm making here. Otherwise, we'd still be practicing and advocating for slavery, because that existed for thousands of years. So yes, there are absolutely some old ideas that we should look at and we should, you know, get rid of. But we also shouldn't discount that the fact that the West, let's say, a country like the USA, a country like the UK, does have strong religious roots and traditions, and even the way that our laws are structured and a lot of the beliefs, whether or not each individual believes in God or not, you cannot deny that a lot of the foundational principles came from a Christian and theological roots. Yep. Right? You could take even some pretty basic concepts in law come from that. And that's why, by the way, that our legal systems are, the legal systems are not identical around the world, because they have different roots and so on. So I think we need to be cautious here. And I think we have all these different tools, you know? So I'm just like, look, like let's bring them all to the table, because one thing is not going to answer everything, right? Religion is not going to answer all the questions that, that science has, right?
Yes.
Because it's not the same realm, but just a raw, you know, scientific perspective, right? Like science is amoral, right? I think that's one big problem with, I don't even want to say it's a problem, it's just a limitation of science, is that it's amoral. It explains how things happen, right? If you understand biology, you can understand how the cells in your body work. You can understand, you know, you can understand certain things. If you understand physics, you can understand how objects move and gravity and certain forces and things like that. You understand chemistry, you can understand, okay, if you look into each of these different compounds or elements, this is how they are structured and the bonds, and this is how they can be broken. This is the melting point, the boiling, right? Like there's all of these things, but it doesn't tell you, okay, so what do you do with your life, right? How do you live? How do you treat other people? Should you get married or not? Like, should you have this? Should you do this? Like there's a whole bunch that it doesn't answer. And even with certain answers, it may lean towards from a hardline rationalist kind of perspective, devoid of any type of compassion or underlying principles. It can actually lead to some very dark conclusions, for example. So I think there's always this balance, you know, there's always this balance. It's, I think it's important to listen to all the different perspectives, you know, let people bring their ideas to the table. That's why a concept like free speech is so important. It's why these discussions, these debates, these interactions, people come with different perspectives. And having a perspective also means that we each have blind spots. And by definition, you cannot see your own blind spots. So if you have this perspective, especially if it's a very strong one, and then someone else has this perspective, they might say something, you'll be able to go, okay, well, what about this, this, and this? I don't think you're considering this. I don't think you're seeing this. And then the other person can say, okay, well, yeah, okay, thanks for pointing that out. Let me consider this. What about this? What about that? And we can all put our ideas together. And even if, here's something that's really important with this as well, Patrick, is even if people don't reach the same conclusions, you at least have a more empathetic world then. At least we can understand each other to some degree, right? No one else is going to ever be able to perfectly understand someone else's beliefs and philosophy and life experiences and opinions and perspectives. But even if you disagree with certain aspects, at least you can empathize. Because another big problem we're having is just this vilification of people who disagree with us. Right, there are people who think that anyone who does not share their political views and doesn't vote for the same party or the same politician or just want the exact same policies or whatever, that they are evil. Right, they're evil. Maybe they should even be punished. Maybe people are even wishing death on each other because they voted for this party and they voted for this party. Right, and that's not healthy. That's not sustainable. This vilification, this demonization of people with other views. So even if people are going to disagree, and we're going to have a lot of disagreement in the world, even with our loved ones, at least if you have these conversations and you share these ideas, then you can see where other people are coming from. So I can say, okay, look, this is my perspective. These are the conclusions I've reached, but I don't think you're a bad person or that you're evil or that you are malicious because you have not reached the exact same conclusions as me on all these issues. So I think it's important that we regain that compassion and empathy, because I do think one threat that we have to our societies is this over polarization. You know, there's a degree of polarization, which is fine. But when things get so fractured that there's a risk of physical violence or a risk of things just being torn apart, then I think we need to be careful.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I generally think like some polarization is, like, that's a natural part of humanity, right? But I'd say the amount that we see in the media today, like they act like it's 50-50, you know, every other person has complete opposing perspectives on things. And, you know, it should be so bad that, you know, you're punch a Nazi, all that kind of stuff, like escalate things to an unnecessary level, where I'd say most people are actually very much similar. You know, if you ask them the same questions and gave them all the same information, I bet they'd fall on the same line about 99% of the time. And there's very few actual points of disagreement.
Yeah. And one point on that is often where people differ, there's always a line in the thread of the thinking, the epistemology, where people differ. Yes. And rarely is it at the very beginning, right? So, okay. You can do this with any issue, by the way. Okay. Let's take taxation. Okay. Let's say you've got somebody who thinks that, take the most extreme. Okay. You've got an anarcho-capitalist, you know, straight up taxation is theft. Taxes should be 0%. And then you have like a socialist who thinks, you know, taxation should be very progressive and, you know, should go above 50% and so on. It's unlikely that either of those people, wants everybody to die.
Yes.
Okay.
Very unlikely.
But oftentimes that, yes. But oftentimes that's the initial frame. It's like, you think taxation should be, you think there should be no taxation? So you must be an evil person who wants poor people to die, who wants everybody to be homeless, who wants people to go without healthcare, who wants people to suffer. You're just evil. Like, that would be the worst possible reason why somebody could believe that. You could also invert it to the other side and say, oh, you're a communist and you want people to suffer and you want people to starve and die and so on and so forth, right? The truth is both those people probably want human beings to flourish. They want people to have more. They want less poverty. They want less homelessness. They want less crime and so on. They've reached quite drastically different conclusions, but if they were to follow each other along the epistemology line, they'd find a place where, okay, this is where we differ. Maybe, could be a simple thing. It could be this person has a lot of trust in the government and thinks that the government is the best mechanism to alleviate certain problems. And they don't view taxation as theft because they view this social contract, and everybody, especially people with more, should put more, a greater percentage into the pot, right? Whereas the other person is very distrustful of the government. They think that human beings, off their own independent efforts and charitable efforts, could do more with it. And if they were able to keep more of their own money, there would actually be more human flourishing, because people are naturally generous, and off voluntary exchanges, they would end up helping more people than the government ever would. Aha, right? That's okay. So that's the line where they break off. So actually they have similar goals, but they've just reached really drastically different conclusions. But what is done so often is people just look at the conclusion. Oh, you voted Republican? Oh, okay, you voted for Trump? Okay, well, you voted for Trump because you're racist and you're a white supremacist and you hate this and you love, you know what I mean? And it's just like, absolutely. Bro, like, you know, it's just like, look, that's not really how people tend to reach their conclusions. And it's a very juvenile and ultimately dangerous way of thinking, because then you're just looking at your neighbors or your fellow countrymen and other people, and you have this idea that, you know, just like at least half of people are just evil. You know, half of the people are just bad. And it's like, well, number one, it's not correct. But number two, walking around your entire life thinking that 50% of people are just bad, like 50% of people are just evil, like, I don't think you're going to have the most healthy and happy life if that's your attitude towards other human beings. But if you could be a bit more empathetic and tolerant, right, that old word, then you'll find that actually, yeah, most people are decent. And yeah, we differ and reach different conclusions in some big ways, but most people are decent and mean well.
Yes, and I think this is sort of just a side effect of the way that our brains operate. To, you know, we wouldn't be able to navigate the world if everything was nuanced. We have to packet things into shortcuts so we can actually just get up and go throughout our day without overthinking every little thing. So it's kind of understanding, like, where are we applying shortcuts where we don't need to, versus, you know, the other way around, where do we need more nuance? Zuby, I could talk to you all day. I'm looking at the clock. I'm amazed at how much time has passed in this short period of time. Do you got time for one more question?
Yeah, go for it, bro. Go for it.
All right, man. So this is one last thing that I appreciate you doing quite a bit. It's an amazing thing, which is encouraging physical fitness. You know, you have a book, Get Strong. You know, you talk about quite a bit, or Strong Advice. Excuse me.
That's right.
Get Strong. That sounds like a horrible title. Strong Advice is an incredible title. So please excuse me that blunder. But Strong Advice, incredible book. You constantly advocate for it. And I'm curious to ask you the question, do you believe that physical fitness and, you know, kind of like working out your meat vehicle has anything to do with your mental political philosophy?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think it does. And one thing I love about exercise in general, but I think particularly something like weightlifting and, you know, I guess this would go for cardio as well, is that it's all on you.
Yep.
You know, it's all on you. It trains you to have what I call an internal locus of control rather than an external one. Every day you go in the gym, the weights weigh the same. You know, 100 pounds is always 100 pounds. 1 mile is always 1 mile. It's totally objective. It's on you, your diet, your training regimen, your recovery regimen, all of that. It's always on you. And I think that having that ownership philosophy and personal responsibility philosophy takes people far in life. And if you can apply it in the gym or in the weight room, you can apply it to other aspects of your life, whether you're launching a podcast or releasing a book, starting a business, even in your relationships with people. It's the same qualities to some degree that lead to success in all of the above. You know, perseverance, discipline, working hard, pushing past difficult points, learning how to get over plateaus, being consistent day in, day out, having a long-term vision instead of a very short-term perspective, being willing to, you know, embrace some that, you know, sometimes it's going to suck and it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a little bit painful. You're going to have some setbacks, but you've got to keep on moving forward. I think all of those philosophies I try to apply to other things that I do. And I think one of the biggest gains or lessons I've gotten from my, man, I've been going to the gym for about 20 years now. I started in my mid-teens. I think one of the biggest things is just learning those concepts and being able to just bring that into other things that I do. And I find that happens with a lot of other people. I actually find that people who, it's funny because especially when it comes to weightlifting, you know, like guys and girls who lift weights or, you know, strength train or whatever, there's this long running meme of, you know, like the kind of stupid jock meathead, yes, kind of guy, you know, like as if having muscles and intelligence are inversely correlated or something like that. But in reality, I find the very much opposite to be true. I find actually if someone's in good physical shape and is very disciplined and consistent with their training and so on and thoughtful about it, then they tend to be disciplined and thoughtful and emotionally regulated and well controlled in other areas of their life. So that's one reason why I focus a lot on physical fitness, not just for the health benefits or, you know, anything shallow and aesthetic, but also because, you know, there's tons of health benefits, but also the mental health benefits and also the overall life benefits. Because if you can be consistent in that, then you can apply that same idea to other aspects of your life and you're bound to improve in them as well.
I couldn't agree more. I see physical fitness as something, you know, it's one of those unifiers of all people, you know, like you said, 100 pounds is 100 pounds, a mile is a mile. I think when we look at these big societal challenges and obstacles that we have, there's some things that we can fall back on, which is, you know, if I see you lifting a crazy heavy weight, I'm like, damn, like I know what that feels like. You know, I can relate to that. It creates a sense of cohesion. Also, you know, I think enhances that sense of truth and understanding sort of, you know, what it takes to see results and what it takes to overcome resistance. And if more people were able to experience that, then I think we'd all be better off. Mm-hmm. But Zuby, thank you so much for your time today. I could seriously ask you questions, talk about this stuff, these deep, you know, never ending, no solution type questions all day long. Before we wrap up, do you have any final pieces of knowledge, philosophy, anything that you want to leave with the audience, something to take forward with them into the real world and hopefully find some benefit from?
Man, I would just tell people, look, don't outsource your thinking. Always be thinking. Don't just listen to the news or just listen to me or just listen to Patrick. You know, listen to different people, come up with your own ideas, test them in the waters in the real world. And just keep working on yourself. You know, none of us are perfect. None of us have all the answers. None of us have all the ideas. So just, you know, work hard, treat people well, look after yourself, and think for yourself. And we'll be all right, man. We're going to make it through. And to anyone who's concerned about the negativity in the world, because we've lived through a pretty negative past 2 years. It's been rough. Regardless of where you are, especially for certain people in certain places, it's just been very rough and isolating, but, maintain hope. Don't get demoralized. Things will get better. Things will get better. The road is bumpy, as we've said, but things are going to improve and yeah, we're going to make it, guys. We're going to make it.
I agree. The pendulum will swing back. We will all make it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Zuby. Thank you for that. And please, I hope everyone follows you on Twitter. It'll be very easy to find with your nearly 700,000 followers. Your account pops up. Listen to Real Talk with Zuby by Strong Advice and watch all your stuff. It's all amazing.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, man. everybody. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, please hit the subscribe button and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. You can find us on Twitter at KWC Pod, on Instagram at Knowledge Without College Podcast. You can find me, Patrick Butler, at PatrickButler00 on Instagram and Twitter. I encourage you to send over any feedback you have. If there's any guests you'd like to hear on the show, any topics you'd want to hear discussed, I want to know about it. I want to hear your feedback and opinions. So please help me make this a better experience for you. And I look forward to hearing from you. Have an excellent day, and thanks for listening.